Makeup, a neo-surrealist testifying at a budget committee hearing. Patient submission. The members patiently submitted to the call to order, in spite of the fact that only two of the afternoon witnesses had arrived. Three were expected. Webster said, "A formal notice of abdication, especially in writing." The chairman was a solemn, sincere man, one of Webster's faithful friends. He was good-natured, even though he didn't smile much. Mark, the minority leader, was usually very happy. Sometimes his associates complained that he was not careful and cautious enough. Once in July, they asked him to step down to a leadership position in a subcommittee. Nothing ever came of it. On this particular occasion, Mark was not smiling much either. He was nervous. Everyone had gathered to hear allegations about a conflict of interest. His. Mark's on-again, off-again relationship with Vanessa had put him in a precarious position in this well-publicized meeting, particularly with the witnesses, particularly with the one who hadn't arrived yet. Bill told Mark yesterday that he shouldn't worry about it. New business hadn't been added to the agenda. Since his problem wasn't discussed in the morning session, it couldn't be introduced for discussion today. Bill was a very good intern, and he was correct about the agenda. Mark remained uneasy, though. A couple of hours into the meeting, the chairman leaned over to Mark and told him that he didn't think the discussion was getting anywhere, and that they might have to adjourn to discuss matters behind closed doors. Mark nodded. Asking recognition from the membership as a whole and receiving it from the chairman, Webster added the following to the record. A settlement, including an adjustment of opposing principles, systems, and demands by modifying some aspects of each. The task force was composed of six members. Included were Mark and the chairman, and two others chosen by the leaders. Witnesses, although one protested wildly, would not be allowed to speak to the task force. The battle over witnesses was won by Mark, admirably. The chairman was not pleased either, but Mark's arguments were well constructed. The budget committee should not go over budget. So the task force, including spouses, girlfriends, or secretaries for each, arrived in Fort Worth late that Friday afternoon. Mark complained because it seemed to take forever to get to the cabins from the airport. And he also didn't like the idea of staying in the same cabin with the chairman. Mark saw the talks as an opportunity to relax and enjoy life as well. Tony, one of his friends in the committee, was in the cabin with the leadership. Another one of Mark's wheelings and dealings. The chairman lost that argument, too. No one was certain when the roundtable discussions were to begin, but many suspected a solution to begin forming that night when the whole group, with spouses, etc., went out for a formal dinner. It was the chairman's way of getting things rolling. Mark decided to go along with whatever he wanted for a while, since the chairman wasn't happy with many of the arrangements thus far. Being in Fort Worth was not the least of his complaints either, so Mark let him have his way. Anyway, Mark wanted to find Vanessa before any of the formal business began, so while Tony unloaded the car and the chairman unpacked his bags, Mark went upstairs to the shower. He stopped once he reached the top of the stairs because he heard the telephone ring. The call seemed to be for the chairman. When he hung up and went outside, Mark walked back downstairs and read the message that he had written on a pad by the phone. The message appeared to be from Webster. Lids from cookie jars, a plastic saucer-shaped disc. Confused and not altogether interested, Mark went back up to the restroom. "Stop, Mark! Stop!" Tony yelled. "This you have got to see." "What?" "Come outside. Everybody's outside." Mark dropped his towel on the counter and hurried out to the field. For some reason, there were more than 12 people out there. It looked more like 50, most of whom Mark had never seen before. Some were playing horseshoes. Others were skipping rope, grown adults jumping rope. Most were throwing frisbees, at least a dozen of them. The chairman was not in sight, but Vanessa had arrived. Mark walked confidently over to where she was talking with Tony and his wife. For an inexact period of time, the four threw a frisbee. Tony's wife quit first. Her first pregnancy was hard on her. Tony left once the conversation began to get provocative. Tony's wife said she wanted to lie down before dinner. Her pregnancy was really beginning to show, and it reminded Mark of his wife. Even after her first pregnancy, she lost all the shape that Vanessa had worked so hard to maintain. For a while, he would stay with Vanessa. "I'm getting hot," she said. Mark agreed. It suddenly seemed like they'd been playing for hours. "Do you want to take a shower?" he asked. Vanessa smiled and started skipping toward his cabin. As her intentions occurred to him, Mark smiled and ran to get Tony. "I need your help getting past the chairman," Mark told Tony from his doorstep. "Vanessa?" "Yes, upstairs." When they went back into the cabin, Tony started an argument with Webster, who finally arose from his bedroom. Vanessa and Mark slipped into the bathroom unnoticed, turned on the shower unnoticed, and stripped unnoticed. Contemplating her from head to foot, Mark laughed because he remembered a strange thing Webster once said to him in a bar. "The end part of the leg, the lowest part, the end of a bed or grave, any of the five digits of the forepart, mentally or physically alert." Mark was alert. Vanessa was aware. Her body seemed different to him every time he saw her. For example, on this day, her nipples were a rosier pink than they had been during the winter. Mark assumed she tanned naked. He couldn't be sure, and he didn't want to take the time to ask, but he couldn't locate any tan lines, not even at the base of her ankles, so at the very least, she didn't wear any shoes. But she probably didn't wear anything. He decided this explained her change in complexion. Her hips seemed fuller to him than the last time he saw her, too. He was sure of it as she turned to enter the shower, but he followed without another thought about it. The soap was yellow, and it smelled like it had a moisturizing lotion in it. He grabbed the bar and approached her, arms open, mouth open, mind open. Mark reached, and Vanessa disappeared. He turned to look behind him, and Tony pulled the shower curtain open. "You have company," he said. "What?" Mark was still looking around, still confused. "Someone's here to see you." "What?" "I think it's your son." "My son doesn't know I'm here. Where did Vanessa go?" "I'm sending him up," Tony said. "You'd better dry off." As Mark pulled the towel off the counter, he heard Webster talking downstairs. "A person, any paying customer, receiving the hospitality of another acting as host." Once he got started, he never stopped. Mark's son was 18 and just out of high school. He was bright, Mark thought, but he had the temperament of his mother, intolerable. Mark did not know why Jack was there or how he knew Mark was there, and he was sincerely doubted that he would find out. There was a knocking at the door. Mark wrapped the towel around himself and answered. "Hi, Dad," Jack said. "What are you doing here?" "I had an urgent question." Jack looked back into the hallway. "Who was the woman who left here?" Mark's blood was boiling. "I don't know what you're talking about." "The brunette. She looked vaguely familiar." "Did you drive 500 miles just to ask me that while I was in the shower?" Noticing his anger, Jack retracted. "No, no. What I really want to know about is school." "Okay." Webster was raising his voice downstairs again. "Beautifying or designed to remove or correct for improving the appearance," he yelled. Mark shook his head. Webster's idea of a more persuasive argument was to say basically the same thing again, only louder. He once heard the man repeat the same concept in 9 different ways during a single meeting. Mark would never understand the chairman's tastes in company. Jack interrupted his father's critical assessment. "Dad, you've traveled all over the country for the past 12 years. Tell me, do girls on the East Coast wear more makeup than girls in the West?" Mark looked at him blankly, motioning for him to repeat the question. "Do the girls in the East wear more makeup, cosmetics, than girls on the West Coast?" Mark grinned hesitantly. "The West. The girls in the West wear a lot more makeup than in the East." Jack reacted enthusiastically, reaching out to shake his father's hand. "Dad, I've made a decision. I want to go to school on the West Coast." I cleared my throat and turned to Webster, who had the next question. He told the chairman he didn't have anything else to ask, but said this. Make a formal defense in speech or writing, acknowledging and expressing regret for a fault, a wrong. That was all he said. I looked up, realizing that I had been answering questions for some time, at least a couple of hours. I was getting tired, and I wasn't exactly sure that my testimony had been well received. The chairman asked me if I had any further comments to make before I left. No.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.